If you'll remember, earlier this spring, we studied the first section of the book of the prophet Zechariah, that is the first 8 chapters. And those first 8 chapters considered events of the prophet's own time with looking forward to events in the future. And they were designed mainly to comfort and encourage the exiles returning to Judah from Babylon. And let's just briefly refresh our minds on the content of the first 8 chapters. The prophet had a series of visions in the night. A horseman among the myrtles under the command of the angel of the Lord, which, as we saw, was a military reconnaissance team sent to espy the conditions of the nations of the world, not because God didn't know what the conditions were, but he was delivering a message to his people in terms of the day that they would understand that he is aware of what is going on in the world. And next was the vision of the 4 horns and the 4 craftsmen to destroy them, which, as we saw, was the same prophecy that Daniel gave in his vision of the lion, the bear, the goat, and the indescribable beast, the 4 great empires that would scatter the people of Judah. The first one has already gone into history when he had this vision of the 4 horns. The next, the man, the angel with the measuring line, sent to measure the area of Jerusalem that they were rebuilding with so few people and so few resources. The angel was measuring how great the city would be in the future. And then the vision of the high priest, Joshua, and his change of garments, showing that God had reestablished his blessing upon Israel's priesthood. And the lampstand with 2 olive trees, showing the lampstand representing God's presence in the nation, and the 2 olive trees were the governor and the priest of that day, that God's blessing was with them. The flying scroll to announce God's judgment on those who had rejected the covenant, and the woman in the basket, which was represented iniquity, that was being sent off to Babylon, represented his cleansing of the land from all of the pollutions of their fathers, and the 4 chariots showing the armies of the Lord carrying out the instructions of the scouting people in the first vision that he had of the horsemen. And then there was a series of short messages concerning fastings. All of that primarily was centered in the prophet's own time. But when you come to the second section of Zechariah, it's looking forward, all to the future. And in the 9th chapter and the 1st verse, we see the burden of the word of the Lord. And then in the 12th chapter, in the 1st verse, the burden of the word of the Lord. In the 1st section, he says, the word of the Lord came to me. But here we have 2 instances where he says, the burden of the word of the Lord, meaning that it was a heavy message to deliver. It was not a light and happy message like the previous ones. It is all of trouble and upheaval and of God's judgment. Now, the first three chapters of this section, 9, 10, and 11, have to do with the time between the prophet's time and the days of Messiah, that is, when Christ should come. The second burden has to do with the far distant future that is future even to us as yet. These are really very amazing prophecies, as were the previous ones. So let us read for into the ninth chapter of Zechariah. The burden of the word of the Lord against the land of Hadrach, Damascus, its resting place for the eyes of men and of all the tribes of Israel are on the Lord. Also against Hamath, which borders on it, and against Tyre and Sidon, though they are very wise. For Tyre built herself a tower and heaped up silver like the dust and gold like the mire of the streets. Behold, the Lord will cast her out. He will destroy her power in the sea, and she shall be devoured by fire. Ashkelon shall see it and fear. Gaza also shall be very sorrowful. And Ekron, for he dried up her expectation. The king shall perish from Gaza, and Ashkelon shall not be inhabited. A mixed race shall settle in Ashdod, and I will cut off the pride of the Philistines. I will take away the blood from his mouth and the abominations from between his teeth, and he who remains, even he, shall be for our God, and shall be like the leader of Judah, and Ekron like the Jebusite. I will camp around my house because of the army, because of him who passes by and him who returns. No more shall an oppressor pass through them, for now I have seen with my eyes. If you turn to the last chapter of the next prophet, Malachi, and then the next page is the first chapter of Matthew, there is a span here of 400 plus years between Malachi and Matthew. Now that is a long period of time. Think of, in our own history, this period between 400 and 450 years, thinking back in our own history, goes back to the time of the Protestant Reformation, and how much has occurred in that time. And it's the same here. We tend to think we're jumping from the Old Testament into the New Testament, but when we get into the New Testament, it's a different world from the Old Testament world, politically and religiously and in every other way. Three of the kingdoms, the empires that Daniel saw and that Zechariah saw, have come and gone. And in our Bibles, it is just one big blank. There was no word of prophecy for that long period of time. But that doesn't mean that nothing happened. Many things happened, and that is the time when most of the institutions and customs and so forth of the New Testament were developed. That's when the Sadducees developed as a caste in the priesthood. That's when the Pharisees developed beginning as a Back to the Bible movement. That's when the Essenes rebelled against the Sadducees and withdrew from the temple. That's when later the Zealots arose, those to the Jews, freedom fighters, to the Romans, terrorists. And if you want to know something about the events in between that so affected the New Testament, there are several very good books on the market that to learn. But as I mentioned before, to understand the prophets is to gain a better understanding of the New Testament and especially of the Gospels. Now, in the prophet's day, he was living during the Persian Empire. And it was a time for those provinces, at least, of peace. And the Jews prospered who returned to Judea. Also, the Jews who remained in Babylon prospered and built there a community that existed for over 1,000 years. But in this section that we have just read, there is a very startling prophecy of events that were at least 100 or more years after the prophet's life. This prophecy here is concerning Alexander the Great. Alexander was called the Great because he was the greatest military genius, many people say, of all time. And in his early 30s, he died bemoaning that he had no further worlds to conquer, or at least he was not able to. And he was one greatly affected the ages that followed him. The Arabic form of the word name Alexander is Iskander. And one of the important cities where there's been a lot of fighting in Iraq today is Iskandaria, which is the Arabic form of Alexandria. In Egypt, there is a city that Alexander founded called Alexandria that has been constantly occupied since his time until this present day. He had a great effect on history after following him. And these verses that we've just read show his campaign of conquest. Now, you can find in the apocryphal book, 1 Maccabees, much of the history that happened between Malachi and Matthew. It is not inspired word of God, but it is correct history. Now, the rest of the books of the Maccabees are fanciful. But in reading through here, we see the burden of the word of the Lord against Hadrach. Hadrach was a city in eastern or western Syria that was the northernmost reach of the Empire of Solomon. And it was an important city of Syria. And Damascus, its resting place. Damascus, we're all familiar with that. Syria, Syrian city, it's the capital of Syria today. It's where the Apostle Paul went to that city to try to arrest the Christians and met the Lord on the way. So this is the chief cities of Syria. When Alexander set out to destroy the Persian Empire that had tried to invade and destroy Greece, you'll remember in your history lessons, Assyria after he had conquered what is the Greeks called Anatolia, which is today Turkey, his campaign turned into Syria, which he conquered very swiftly. And then for the eyes of men and all the tribes of Israel are on the Lord. He struck fear into all of those people, and the Jews especially turned to the Lord for protection. And against Hamath is a city in what is today the Baca Valley, and it's one of the places where the Israelis landed to drive the Syrians out of the of Lebanon in a recent war there. And Hamath was the next conquest of Alexander. And then he says, and against, that is this burden of the Lord, is against Tyre and Sidon. These were the chief cities of the remaining Canaanites in the prophet's day. The Greeks call them the Phoenicians. These were the great port cities where they spread out their empire, founding the Punic Empire in North Africa that nearly brought Rome to its knees. And Alexander conquered them. And against Tyre and Sidon, though they be very wise, for Tyre built herself a tower. He heaped up silver like dust, and gold like the mire of the streets. Behold, the Lord will cast her out. He will destroy her power in the sea, and she shall be devoured by fire. And this is exactly what happened. The Assyrians tried to conquer Tyre, and they failed. The Babylonians tried to conquer Tyre, and they failed. Alexander conquered Tyre. And the reason the Assyrians and the Babylonians could not conquer Tyre is because it was two cities. There was a city on the coast at the foot of the Lebanon Mountains. And then there was an offshore island that they built, a fortified island out there with fortified anchorage for their fleet. And when the Assyrians and the Babylonians came, destroyed the city on the coast, all they did was they just moved out onto this island city, and the Assyrians and the Babylonians, being a land army, they had no fleet, so they never did conquer Tyre. Alexander's army was a land army too, but Alexander was a different kind of person. So he put all of his soldiers to work carrying boulders and earth and whatever they could, and they built a mole out to this island, which was about a quarter of a mile offshore, so that his armies could march over. And they did destroy the city, burn it with fire. They did burn the entire Phoenician fleet, and it never again recovered. And that is what the prophet here is expressing in poetry, for all of this is the prophet wrote his message in poetry. The burden of the word of the Lord against the land of Hadrach and Damascus, its resting place, for the eyes of men and all the tribes of Israel are on the Lord. Also against Hamath, which borders it, and against Tyre and Sidon, though they be very wise. For Tyre built herself a tower and heaped up silver like dust and gold like the mire of the streets. Behold, the Lord will cast her out. Alexander took credit for that, but the prophet said the Lord did it. And he will destroy her power in the sea, and she shall be devoured by fire. And Ascalon shall see it and fear, and Gaza shall be very sorrowful, and Ekron, for he dried up their expectation. The king shall perish from Gaza, and Ashkelon shall not be inhabited. These are four cities of the Philistines. And Alexander next turned his way to go into Egypt, destroying each of these cities on the way as he went. And he said, a mixed race shall settle in Ashdod, one of the cities of the Philistines. It became a pagan city filled with Philistines and Greeks and Egyptians and Romans and different peoples, very metropolitan. And I will cut off the pride of the Philistines. I will take the blood from their mouth and the abominations from between his teeth. But he who remains, even he shall be for our God, and shall be like a leader of Judah, and Ekron like a Jebusite. I will. This also was fulfilled in history. For you remember, he mentions the Jebusite here. David would capture Jebus, which he renamed Jerusalem, from the Jebusites. And the captured Jebusites became pacified and even friends of Israel, and eventually just developed into, mixed with the people of Israel. And it was a Jebusite who offered to give King David the site to build, on which to build the temple. And David said he would not accept it as a gift. He would not give to the Lord something that cost him nothing. So the Jebusites became friendly within Israel. And here the prophet predicts that the same thing would happen with the Philistines, for they ceased to be a separate people. So here we have one of the great kings of the world. And in verse 8 here, the word of the Lord is, I will camp around my house because of the army, because of him who passes by and him who returns. No more shall the oppressor pass through them. This actually happened in history. Alexander, in his conquest, approached to Jerusalem. And as the priests of Judah should have done with the Babylonians, Jeremiah told them to submit to them, and they would not, and were destroyed. The priests in Alexander's day did go out and meet Alexander in a term of peace. And Alexander was so impressed that he declared Jerusalem to be a temple city free of taxation. And that's why they had the status later that the Syrians tried to destroy. But here, and then his army bypassed Jerusalem and Judea, went on and conquered Egypt, and then returned. And that's what he's saying here, I will camp about my house. God's army was camped around Jerusalem at that time. Because of the army, that is the army of Alexander, because of him who passes by on his way to Egypt, and him who returns, no more shall an oppressor pass through them, for I have seen with my eyes. So here we have the prophet's description of Alexander the Great, one of the greatest warriors of history. One of the, he established to that time the farthest flung empire on earth. He was the world's man. Now, the next section here is about a different king. A king who was, he could be a great man of war and would be, but he came as the Prince of Peace. Rejoice greatly, O daughter of Zion. Shout, O daughter of Jerusalem. Behold, your king is coming to you. He is just and having salvation, lowly and riding on a colt, the foal of a donkey. Riding on a donkey, a colt, the foal of a donkey. And I will cut off the chariot from Ephraim and the horse from Jerusalem. The battle bow shall be cut off. He shall speak peace to the nations. His dominion shall be from sea to sea and from the river to the ends of the earth. As for you also, because of the blood of your covenant, that is Judah, I will set your prisoners free from the waterless pit. Return to the stronghold, you prisoners of hope. Even today I declare that I will restore double to you. Here we have a prophetic portrait of the one whom Zechariah had been describing as the angel of the Lord, as the man whose name is the branch, and later as one, the man, God said, who is my fellow. There are some very truly astonishing prophecies yet to come in this book. But this, of course, is quoted in the New Testament. Rejoice greatly, O daughter of Zion. Shout, O daughter of Jerusalem, behold, your king is coming to you. He is just and having salvation, lowly, riding on a donkey, a colt, the foal of an ass. And then he goes on to tell about the military exploits of this Prince of Peace when he comes to establish peace instead of turmoil and war. So in these few verses, Zechariah paints a picture of the two advents of Christ. His first advent, coming lowly and sitting upon a donkey as the Prince of Peace. And then again he will come as a man of war, and he shall cut off the battle bow, and he shall speak peace to all the nations in his second advent. Here the prophet sees the first and the second advent, but he does not see the intervening age in which we live. It's just like these mountains to the west here. We can look to Lookout Mountain, and we can look to Mount Douglas Mountain beyond it. We can't see what's between those two mountains. We can look to Lookout Mountain this way, and look off towards Mount Evans. We can see those two mountain peaks, but we can't see all of the valleys and the hills and the rivers and the streams and the forest in between. And that's the way the prophets looked at history. And one of the great lessons of prophecy is to study the mountain peaks of prophecy. The prophet here saw two great mountain peaks of prophecy: the coming of the Prince of Peace and his return in triumph, his first and his second coming. And then in the rest of this chapter, we read what happened after Alexander, from Alexander's time to the New Testament time. So you see, we do have some way scripturally to fill in the blank between Malachi and Matthew. For I have bent Judah, my bow, and fitted the bow with Ephraim, that is uniting the divided people of Israel as Jews, not as Ephraim and Judah. And raise your sons, O Zion, against your sons, O Greece, and made you like the sword of a mighty man. The sons of Greece were the successors of Alexander. When he died, his kingdom was divided among four of his generals. One of the generals' name was Ptolemy. He became the king of Egypt. The other's name was Antiochus. He became the king of Syria. And these two were constantly jockeying back and forth in war and intrigue, trying to gain ascendancy over each other. And of course, as always, the Jews were caught in the middle. And so here the prophet said, "For I have bent Judah, my bow, and fitted Ephraim, my bow with Ephraim, and raised up your sons, O Zion, against your sons, O Greece, that is, these Greek kings of Egypt and Syria, and made you like the sword of a mighty man." This is the time of the Maccabees, when Matthias, the priest, a priest at that time, rallied his seven sons, who were also priests, to a guerrilla warfare, and they actually won against the Syrian army and delivered Jerusalem into a period of independence that lasted for maybe 150 years. "Then the Lord will be seen over them, as his arrow will go forth like lightning." And they did. They were guerrilla striking like lightning here and there. "And the Lord God will blow the trumpet and go forth with the whirlwinds from the south. And the Lord of hosts will defend them." And this has been the occasion for poetry, even in our own time. One called Judas Maccabeus, I believe it was even made into a film, but you can read about the war in the book of 1 Maccabees. "And they shall deliver, they shall devour and subdue with sling stones. What they lacked in military equipment, they made up for by improvisation. They shall drink and roar as with wine. They shall be filled with blood like basins, like the corners of the altar. The Lord their God will save them in that day. And as the flock of his people, for they shall be like the jewels of a crown, lifted like a banner over his land. For how great is his goodness, and how great is its goodness, and how great is its beauty. And the goodness and beauty of the Holy Land is great even to this day. Grain shall make the young men thrive, and new wine the young women." So here the prophet is describing the events that will happen between the Hebrew Old Testament and the Greek New Testament, of which we read. These were some of those events that shaped the world of the New Testament. And so this describes the time between the Testaments. And then we don't have time to go into the next chapter, but in next chapter, chapter 10, we see a description of the days of Messiah. And then in the 11th chapter, we see the account in prophetically of the rejection of the Messiah. So we'll take up that next week.